This is going to be a short intro because everyone knows what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's Fanny and Alexander.
Yep.
When we left off, we met the Fannies. I mean, the families. We met the Ekdahls.
Yep.
To clarify, yes, Petra is the daughter. We figured mm-hmm. that out after watching. When you first meet her later on, she says, hello, Papa, or something to her dad. You're like, all right. But the other two kids are also their kids. Is the answer. It takes a little, just sort of a close viewing on that one. So today we're watching episode
2.
Not episode
2 and 3.
Right. And the reason for that is because that would just be too much. They're longer than we thought. It would be too much time. And there's just too much to do in a day. So maybe this miniseries will get stretched out a little bit. Or maybe next time we'll watch both. Who knows?
Maybe next time I won't have just woken up from a very warm nap. And now it's very cold in my room.
It was a warm nap. I did not realize. Well, hold on to your butts. Because we are about to launch into Fanny and Alexander episode dose. I don't know what the title of it is.
It's The Wraith.
Is it?
Yep.
Well, pinch my cheeks and call me slappy because I did not know that.
I can see it. It says season 1, episode 2, The Wraith.
Oh, I see it. There it is right there. The Wraith. I don't know why it's called The Wraith. Is it about a ghost who turns into a motorcycle? Maybe. That's the only Wraith I know.
Wraiths are just a type of spirit.
There's a movie called The Wraith, and I don't remember much about it. I think it's about a man who dies and he possesses a motorcycle or something. Maybe it's a sports car. I don't remember. Are you ready to watch The Wraith?
This is TVMA.
Mm-hmm.
I am. Let's do it. Bye, guys. See you later.
All right. Wait. All right. See you later. Is that our new intro?
Yep.
All right. See you later. I am Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And
it's Del Toro time.
Hey, we're back. We saw episode 2 of...
Fanny and Alexander.
Fanny Butt and Alexander. Fanny Alexander, as they say in England, bottom.
Nope.
And Alexander.
Nope.
That joke already?
No, you didn't, but it didn't need to be made.
You can't say Fanny and Alexander in England. You'll get kicked out of the theater.
What do they call it in England? Probably the same thing.
They called it Francine
and Alexander.
Yeah, Frankie. Frankie and Al. They're big on slang names there. What are they called? Nicknames.
Isn't Fanny a nickname? Or did someone just name their kid Fanny?
Fanny? Is it short for Francis? Fanny Bryce is a famous actor. What's her real name? Fanny Bryce. Fanny Bryce was born... Oh, Fania. Because she was born in like 1891. Fania Borach. So, you know, that's not really fair to go off of. It's short for Funiculi Funicula. We watched episode 2 of Fanny and Alexander.
Episode dose.
It starts with the longest Shakespeare rehearsal in the history of cinema. Willow, straight talk here. You grew up surrounded by theater.
Yep.
Like community level theater.
Mm-hmm.
Your father did some shows when you were a kid.
Why did you refer to yourself in the third person?
me papa did some shows. And you also went to go see shows that I would mm-hmm. take you to go see.
I was in a couple of shows.
You were in a couple of shows. That's right. You have a long history with theater. And I would say that the theater that I did was not attended by people in fancy dresses or tuxedos.
I think I saw one guy in a tux once when I went to see a Chameleon Theater production.
That was probably some guy living on the street outside the theater. And it wasn't a tuxedo. He simply painted himself in black shoe polish. There was an episode of Mork and Mindy where Mork had to go to the doctor and the doctor told him to take off all his clothes. And when he comes back in, Mork looks like he's wearing one of those old-timey swimsuits with like the mm-hmm. stripes and the jumper. And his doctor's like, I told you to take off all your clothes. And Mork goes, Oh, no, this is a tattoo. I don't know why that reminded me of that. I don't know why I thought
Thanks.
That. So you saw, so you were kind of in Alexander's shoes. You sort of, you sat in on a lot of like just rehearsal for shows. I would take you to see, I would take you when I was directing or acting in something, you would sometimes just have to sort of sit around while I was working on stuff.
Yeah. Or I painted sets.
Or you painted sets.
Like with Reefer Madness, the show that I definitely was old enough to see.
I do remember you sitting in on rehearsals for the Reefer Madness orgy scene, which was which was probably not something you should have been a party to. But it made you see our friend Andrew in a new light. He was dressed as the goat man with no shirt on.
I mean, I had to see in his underwear, so like...
We've all seen it. We've all seen it at this point. So you can sympathize with Alexander. You know what it's like to see your father almost die on stage.
No. I know what it's like. Well, I don't know what it's like to see you almost die on stage, but I have heard stories of you almost dying on stage.
That's true. I have almost died.
Like during that production of Sweeney Todd.
When I biffed it off the stage. Twice. Yep. Tore my leg up. Something fierce. No, so Alexander is watching. It's a while later. It's a little while later. And
what did they say? It was...
Well, there's a year jump later on in the episode. But at this point, they've clearly been working on Hamlet for a while, although not long enough for it to get good.
Not long enough for them to have any sets.
These sets anything. Look like garbage. I don't know what they're thinking. This is some bad Shakespeare set. I assume these are just rehearsal sets, to be fair. Like, I assume, because it's just some flats. One has like what looks like a ladder painted on it, but like only half-heartedly painted on it.
It's like somebody ran out of paint while they were painting the ladder.
But they're rehearsing the Hamlet's father's ghost scene. Which is, the ghost is being played by Alexander's papa.
You know, I don't normally criticize symbolism in movies.
Mm-hmm.
But this is some beating in my face symbolism. Like, why? Like, they're just like, you know what? Our audience is too stupid to understand what's going on. So we really need to, like, punch them in the face with everything.
I don't think it's that they think that the audience is too stupid. I think that theatrical symbolism and Ingmar Bergman go hand in hand. I think it's one of those things that, like, the theater and theatricality, it is a little on the nose now that you mention it. It's a little on the nose. Because, spoiler alert, Alexander's father is about to have a stroke and die very soon.
Yep.
He has a stroke.
Where is Fanny during this? Why is this movie called Fanny and Alexander when it's clearly just Alexander?
In the DVD commentary, the commentator mentions that the movie could very well be called Alexander and Fanny, or simply Alexander. But they are brother and sister, and he points out that if you
with Mitzi, and we don't go around calling our lives like the Mitzi and Willow show.
I think the idea is that you're supposed to remember that Fanny is a presence, even though it's not from her POV. And it invites you to sort of compare and contrast the way these two children who are in the same situation together respond completely differently. Fanny is very stoic. She's not demonstrative so far. She sort of rolls with it and knows how to play the game. Whereas Alexander is a little older and he's stubborn and he kind of falls apart a lot. Like a lot.
That's a mood.
Yeah. Oscar Ekdahl falls apart on stage, and in the middle of a scene he loses sort of like he's like, where am I? What's going on? Why am I here? He has had a stroke, and then we are blessed with an extended deathbed sequence where this was lost on us because we're not from Sweden, and we certainly weren't from Sweden in 1910.
Nope.
But it was pointed out that, like, a big deal with this is the fact that traditionally this culture is supposed to be extraordinarily like non-emotionally demonstrative when it comes mm-hmm. to things like death, when it comes to the propriety around death. So when you see what's his face, Carl's wife, Lydia, the German wife, break down and run out of the room crying, like that is like the height of no. Like you, that shows that she is just the wrong person for this guy, and like mm-hmm. that is like you do not break down like that.
It's pretty rich coming from that guy, but sure.
yeah, he's really good at holding in his emotions, isn't he? But we see kind of just the way people are dealing with the death, the oncoming death of Oscar Ekdahl. And we have a deathbed sequence with that's very much Guardians of the Galaxy, mm-hmm. Where he calls his children in, and the grandmother is there, and she's keeping a stiff upper lip. Fanny walks in. She goes over to her papa's side, takes his hand. Then he calls Alexander, and what does Alexander do?
Hides.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, if you are ever on your deathbed and you have a barf bucket right next to you, I'm not going to come near you.
There is a bucket of vile fluids right next to the bed. And they didn't do a good job at like cleaning up around the rim of that bucket.
No.
It's grody to the max. I like to believe it was just full of soup.
Ew.
That was how they served the father, his split pea soup.
Disgusting. You know, I've been eating a lot of soup recently.
Not anymore.
Specifically cream of potato soup. You were the one who introduced me to cream of potato soup. You used to buy cans of Campbell's soup.
And I would say, Willow, I would like you to meet cream of potato soup. Yep. And cream of potato soup, I would like you to meet Willow now you've been introduced.
And I got those oyster crackers that you used to get.
In a big bag. Shaped,
yeah. And man, does it bring me back.
Would it surprise you to know that that tradition has continued?
Are you serious?
Mitzi does not eat it, but I will frequently have reason to buy a large crinkly bag of oyster crackers.
Nice.
Yeah. They're good on soup.
They are.
Yeah. What are
you gonna... cheaper than bread.
They are cheaper than bread. You can't. Have you ever made a sandwich of oyster crackers?
I just pound them up, put some water in there, bake it for a while, bread.
What I had an image of like you get like a like sort of a square like cookie cutter and you lay it down and you lay down oyster crackers on the inside of it. And then you cover it with peanut butter and then you jelly and then you lay down another layer of oyster crackers and kind of gently press them down and then you lift up the cookie cutter shape and you're like, all right, here it goes. And then it immediately falls apart.
Yeah.
You could hold it together with slices of American cheese.
Mm.
Somebody in our listening audience, give that a shot.
Don't do that, actually. Maybe don't.
Yeah, so Alexander, unfortunately, has a collapse onto the floor, and then he crawls into the corner. And, I mean, Oscar seems all right with it. He's dying. Well, he's like, come take my hand. And then Alexander goes to take his hand, and Oscar's like, oh. And you're like, oh, no. It's terrifying.
Yeah. It's the final prank on his boy.
It is. In a family filled with pranks, he got the last one in. He's a TikTok sensation. When I was a child, high school age, late junior high school age, so like 13 or so, my aunt was in the hospital and not doing well. She eventually died. She ultimately died after like a year in the hospital, a year and a half. It was horrible. But I did go and visit her. We did like the pilgrimage to the hospital. And I remember being incapable of forming a coherent sentence or forming a coherent thought and being terrified and standing there weeping in front of her, which I did not want to do because it didn't seem helpful to my aunt to be like, just I can't talk to you. All I can do is weep. So I can attest to the fact that standing at the bedside of a loved one who is clearly not doing well for a child or an adult is super stressful, and you do want to just crawl into a corner and hide. So kudos, Alexander. I feels you. Oscar
was
also
your sister more like Fanny in that situation?
My sister was far more like Fanny. I would say my sister and I are very much Fanny and Alexander when it comes to that.
Except for she's older than you.
She is older than me, but she can hold it together. She knows how to comport herself in society. And I tend to collapse and hide in a corner and imagine death around every corner. So, one of Oscar's final wishes is that he have a simple funeral with no pomp, no circumstance, no bands playing, no songs, no one making a big deal over any of it. And then he kicks the bucket, and what happens?
He gets that. Nothing ever happens, and everyone is emotionally well. Well, everyone's emotionally well. They deal with it well. There's a therapist. It's great.
And the movie ends.
Yep. The other two parts, just credits.
Just credits. It's a long, lot of thanks. Thank you. It's a lot of Patreon subscribers.
Yep.
Everyone gets their fingers into the pie here. Everyone wants to be represented. Everyone wants to say goodbye. And he ends up having a just blowout funeral with a marching band and a lot of pallbearers. And it's. I mean, you are not enjoying it. It's not a movie to enjoy, but I was, I don't know if you could tell, weeping at the deathbed sequences. I was a wreck.
I couldn't tell.
No, I was.
I wasn't looking at you. I was looking at the movie.
Because I was just like, this is rough. It's hard. Oscar was a pretty good guy. And
yeah.
Everyone likes him.
I don't cry at scenes in this like that in movies. I just say, I don't want to watch this anymore.
I know you do. You say that a lot. You said that about every 15 seconds during this part.
It's just so long.
I love it. I love it.
It's
so much.
It's so long. I don't care.
So he dies. There is a, well, let's talk about my deja vu.
Your deja who?
No, but if you want me to check in the kitchen, I can. Or something. There's a line from Groundhog Day about deja vu. I couldn't remember what it was. I had massive deja vu during a scene in this. Mm-hmm. So much that I got dizzy from it and couldn't remember having deja vu until I watched the movie again the next day or 2 days later. I was like, wait a minute. I had deja vu during this. And I actually wrote to you.
You texted me. You're like, why did I have deja vu during this?
There is a scene where Fanny and Alexander are woken up in the middle of the night by screaming in the house. Mm-hmm. It's their mother. She is in the room where the father's body is lying in state. And she is, in the script, I believe it says that they wake up to hear her sobbing. And this is not sobbing.
No.
This is wailing from like the depths of their soul.
Mm-hmm.
It was so upsetting. It was so upsetting. It blasted me into deja vu.
Why did it blast you into deja vu, though?
Why did I say?
Because you had a dream about the scene.
Didn't I? Then the next day I was like, I don't think I actually did have a dream about the scene. I think it was just deja vu. I think that scene actually fractured my soul. I think that she was in so much pain and loss and grief that I left my body and formed new memories that like I dissociated, and the dissociated side of me watched the movie along with me. And while I was watching it, it formed a parallel memory of watching the movie. Like, that's all I can think of. Like, it was that traumatic for me. I haven't been that emotionally affected by a movie in a long time.
It's funny because I had the exact opposite reaction.
What's the opposite of deja vu?
Not deja vu of being emotionally affected by the movie. I just didn't care.
Yeah, that's because you start shutting down. I can see the switches going off in your head. You're like, nope, 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 nope. I hate this. It's like, do, 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 do. You're like, it's like that scene in Empire Strikes Back where Han Solo just turns off C-3PO. And you're like, this. You're like, for the rest of the movie.
I don't know. I was I don't think I was turned off for the rest of the movie because I definitely was getting frustrated.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm crying because I was laughing so hard, not because I have any emotional problems right now. I do, but that's not important to the podcast.
Well, you immediately started getting angry at the mom. And I think that that wailing scene is important. Otherwise, what comes next might lead you to believe she had never cared for her husband that much. She promises the theater that things are going to go on as normal. She's in charge now because she promised her husband that. But a year on, she basically pulls them aside and is like, we're done. Like, this isn't going to work out. It's in the middle of the rehearsing the play Candle on the Head.
I thought they were doing a performance because there was a tiny audience.
It was a rehearsal for you were right. It's a Shakespeare play. I don't remember which one it is. It's one of those Shakespeare plays, you know.
It's definitely not Hamlet.
Candle on the Head. Hold on, I'm going to look it up because I don't have it in my notes. What Shakespeare play has a guy with a candle on his head? It doesn't say.
It's also an umbrella.
It's insisting it's Macbeth. But that's not true. Oh, Macbeth.
No, Macbeth is the one with the person who carries the candle, right?
Yeah, there is.
There's no funky interlude with the man who's sitting in the rain singing a song with a candle on his head and an umbrella in Macbeth. That would be very funny, but not there.
What play is it? I don't know. But trust me, there's a guy with a candle on his head sitting in an umbrella. It is raining on stage, which is pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing the person points out in the commentary track is, and this goes back to what you were saying last episode, is the house is filled with candles in the beginning of this story. And at this point, it whittles down to one candle on stage, on the head of a fool.
Yep.
And from this point on, all the light is out of the story. All the fire is out of the story. Things are taking a dramatic turn. The mom's not doing well. She's got a new boyfriend.
I hate how? How is no one else like, this guy's evil? He looks evil. I don't understand.
She's got a new boyfriend. He is the bishop. And he's not fun.
No.
The first time we ever get a good scene with him, Alexander comes home from school, unfortunately, in a great mood. And everyone's like acting like the devil just walked in. And they're like, the bishop wants to see you. And he goes in and the bishop's like, I understand you've been telling lies at school. And at first he goes through all this stuff about like telling lies and why would anyone tell lies? And like he's poking Alexander in the head a lot and rapping on his skull. Mm-hmm. And the guy is pure malevolence. And you find out that Alexander was telling kids at school that he was being sold to the circus. And everyone found out about it. And now he's in deep, deep do. And his mother's sitting there and she's like, I can't believe you would tell such horrible things to your friends. And the bishop's like, look what you've done to your mother. You need to apologize. Actually, he's not angry. He's evil. So he's like, you need to apologize to your mother. She's really upset and we're never going to do this again now, are we? And the ridiculousness of that lie. Like, clearly Alexander wasn't trying to convince his friends he'd been sold to the circus. Like, this isn't like a life-disrupting lie.
No.
He was just joking around with his friends.
Yep.
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
I've made it clear that I have definitely said something similar to my friends. Like, it's, yes. it's not me being dumb. I hate it. I hate him.
But it is the bishop being cruel. And when I was reading about this movie previously, I kept reading about the fact that people were like, you know, it's semi-autobiographical. And Bergman's father doesn't come across very well with this movie. And I was like, really? Because Oscar's like a pretty decent guy. He doesn't get much to do, but he dies and everyone seems to love him. Come to find out, the bishop is based on Bergman's father.
No way.
Turns out That's the more autobiographical part, is the Bergman was raised by his father. Wasn't necessarily this cruel, but their house was kind of run like this. Like this, like, severe... Well, we'll get to how the house is run, because...
It's bad.
Alexander is humiliated, and then his mom's like, oh, by the way, kids, we're getting married. Tee-hee-hee.
I hate her.
Yeah, she's got problems. She's got problems. I can't remember what this reminded me of. What did? Oh, I kept saying this reminds me of Pan's Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much like Pan's Labyrinth. Father dies, who's a wonderful man, and the mother remarries really quickly a more powerful man who is obviously the evil incarnate,
mm-hmm.
and is going to be cruel to the children, and is a cruel, cruel man who is going to rule everything. It's very much Pan's Labyrinth.
Yep.
Up to and including weird supernatural stuff that we haven't mentioned yet.
I wonder why Guillermo del Toro likes this. I think we figured it out.
So yeah, so they're getting married. We meet the family.
Who the family I'm a ding dong.
Yes. That's exactly what I was thinking.
The technical term.
So the bishop is played by Jan Malmsjö, who is a singer and a musical star and a comedy actor. And the role was not written for him. The role was written for, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. What's his face? Max von Sydow, who played the knight in The Seventh Seal.
Yeah.
And has been in many, and was the Exorcist in The Exorcist. I think it's actually pronounced Sidov, but. He offered him the role.
Exorcist.
The old
Exorcist.
Man. The old man. Remember, he was like...
The one who...
He was like 40, and they aged him up to like 60-something.
Yeah, they did that really well.
They did it really well. Offered to him. He couldn't do... Oh, no. He would have done it, but his management people were like, they're not offering him enough money. We're just going to reject it out of hand. And they rejected it. And he said to his dying day... He said that was the biggest regret of his life, was not being in Fanny and Alexander in Bergman's final theatrical release. He writes it. But the guy who got the role does a really good job.
Yeah.
In fact, I think the fact that they got a comedy actor to play the role helps. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there's something about comedy and cruelty that kind of go hand in hand, and he's just good at doing that. Mm-hmm. He's got a really happy family.
Yeah, super happy all the time.
They are all smiles.
Hate all of these people. I think you're supposed to, but like I with every fiber of my being, wish they were all dead.
Yeah, his sister and I don't know who they all are. I couldn't quite figure it out. I think they're all his like sisters. He has an aunt who is confined to bed,
mm-hmm.
and who is played by a man.
Mm-hmm.
Because Bergman wanted to start blurring the line, like as we get into the weirder parts of the movie, he wanted to start blurring the lines of gender.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a later on in the movie, there will be a man played by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Hans Heinrich Lerfeldt plays Aunt Elsa, who is just sort of this like woman who has to be fed and looks haunted. And we find out that the bishop used to have a wife and two little daughters, and what happened to them?
They died.
How?
What was it? They fell in a well or something?
I think they fell in the river and drowned.
Oh, okay.
Did they fall in a well? They didn't fall in a well. No, they didn't fall in a well.
How did they die then?
We don't know.
I thought they said something about them falling in a well or whatever.
Did they fall in a well? Oh my gosh, it's going to bother me now. Oh, I hope they fell in a well. That's more fun. They drown in a river. They drown in the river, not a well.
No.
I don't know. You're confusing this with The Ring.
I think they fell in a well.
They drown in a river. So what happens is the bishop is like, oh, let's move your family into my house. Oh, and by the way, you have to throw away all of your worldly possessions. You can't move into my house with any of your clothes, any of your furniture, any of your stuff, and this goes for your children as well. They have to throw away everything. And to the mom's credit, she's like, I don't think that's going to go over very well. And to the mom's credit, she does stand up for her kids a couple of times.
Yeah.
She does when they're having dinner at the house with the aunts and the maids and everything, and they start like harping on the kids, and the mom is like, things are going to change around here because I don't like your attitude.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they will, but I do commend her for just that little bit standing up. But it's a miserable house.
It is.
Yeah. Pathetic. And there's just some very tense scenes. The kids are going to bed, and there's a scene where the bishop picks... Alexander has brought his little bear with him, his little stuffed bear. Mm-hmm. And the bishop picks it up, and you thought he was going to rip that bear's head off.
Yep.
And he seems to be considering it. Because he picks it up, and he kind of takes the head, and he like... And then he gives it back to Alexander. But the reason we know that there were two little kids who used to live there is because there's a dollhouse in the room. And they get told, like, oh... They just say that there were two little girls who used to live here, and they drown. They don't say daughters at first, right?
I can't remember.
And then Alexander is like, hey, come here, Fanny, come here. And he goes to the window, and they open the shutters. And what's in the windows?
Bars.
They are literally imprisoned in this house. Mm-hmm. He's like, look at this. Check this out. There's bars. And then it immediately fades to black, and that's the end of the episode.
Yep.
There's no, like, there's nothing. There's no button. It's just like, look at this. And you're like, uh-oh. We haven't mentioned the fact that he has now seen the ghost of his father several times.
Yeah, that's also a thing that happened.
Yeah. He's dressed all in white, and he just sort of shows up in the background, sort of looking at Alexander kind of sadly, like, I should have been watching that Hamlet. Should have watched that Hamlet play. This could have told you this is going to happen. At least she didn't marry, like, Carl.
That would be the worst. At least they'd still have, like, the support of the family, though.
They'd still have the family. They'd still have those farts. A lot of farts. In fact, if Carl becomes their dad, you expect him to be cruel, but it's just they get overwhelmed by all the farting they have to watch. Like in the bishop's house, they're like, we wake up every morning and we pray at 6 o'clock in the bishop's chambers. But with Carl, it'd be like, we wake up every morning and I do one of my wonderful fart shows at 6 o'clock every morning in my chambers.
Man,
I think Carl would be happier if he got to fart four more people. So we see that we see the whole family when the wedding happens, and it's miserable, and Alexander's muttering swear words to himself the whole time.
Yep.
It is brilliant. And like, he's just like, ah, it's fun. Like, but like it says what he's saying at the bottom.
I thought
of the
that
screen.
Was at the funeral that it was doing that.
Oh, you're right. Because the wedding takes place in the Ekdahl house. And Alexander sees his father and then throws himself on the dining room table.
Which is good.
Which is a mood, as the kids say. No, you're right. It's at the father's funeral. And yeah, he's muttering swears to himself. It's like the only like normal thing going on. It's like his little act of defiance, which is brilliant. You're correct. But the family, the Ekdahls, watch the bishop and the mom and Fanny and Alexander leave in this like little like foursome, and they're looking out the window, and the grandmother's like, they'll be back, like, we'll get them back. But yeah, they're out of their control now, and the theater has been shut down, and life is bordering on hell and about to tip into nightmare. But I know that there's more ghosts to coming. The ghosts are a popping in this episode.
Speaking of ghosts, now that we're done talking about the movie, because there's nothing else to say, really.
Yeah, that's it. It leaves you on this little note. You're like, okay, these kids are trapped. Things are looking bad. There's two more parts left, so I have a feeling things are going to get worse.
I've been D&Ding lately.
You've been D&Ding.
Just to give our listeners an update on my D&Ding.
Yeah.
Been chilling with some new people. It's pretty fun. So this last week, there was no combat in the session. We were walking through the woods, as one does in D&D. That's all D&D is, walking through the woods.
Okay.
And where was I going with this?
I have no idea.
I lost my train of thought. I was going to make a connection between Fanny and Alexander and what happened in the game, but I can't remember what it was now. I remember the connection I was going
what's
to
What's the connection?
So, I was thinking about Fanny and Alexander.
Okay.
Because I think about the movies that we watch when I play D&D. Okay. And my character in this game is a undead Drulok. She's a druid / warlock.
Okay.
Of the undead variety. And her patron tends to just sort of appear once she levels up, but that's not how it works in the game or in the game of the world. But once they get more power, the patron sort of appears. And I'm just thinking in my head, like, man, what if Alexander's a warlock?
What if Alexander, what if that's the, what if at the end of the movie, he gets an owl letter and he has to go?
It's just, I don't know. I keep drawing parallels between, because I when I create characters, I tend to draw on what I've seen and what I know.
Yes.
So obviously the movies that we've watched have leaked into my character creation process.
Clearly.
And, you know, I didn't realize that Sepha is my character's name. Sepha was based somewhat on the relationship between Ophelia and the Fawn.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Which, of course, led me to draw the parallels between Alexander and... It's just a lot of parallels, writing. It's all plagiarism.
Well, I think Guillermo del Toro will be very proud of you for plagiarizing his work for your creative endeavors. But that's it. Where can you find us?
Hell.
Where we are now. We're on Twitter at Del Toro Time. You can also find us on Facebook at It's Del Toro Time, where I post episodes. Now, I am going to take a big swing here. An attempt to end this episode again.
Anyway, so as I was... No.
So thank you all for listening. We will be back next week with episode... What is episode 3 called? Does it have a name? I am sure it has a name.
The Breakup.
The Breakup. So join us next week for Fanny and Alexander, episode 3, The Breakup. I hope there's a lot of spiciness in this breakup.
I think that there's a lot of child abuse in this episode.
Join us next week for The Breakup.
Child abuse.
But until then, I am Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when it's Del Toro time.